How many of you forgot to? How many of you forgot your underwear? If that's offensive, see Glenn Wilson. He's the one that told me to ask you that. Hey, it's good to see you this morning. I see past all these microphones. Somebody pick me up and let me just keep on going, but okay. Here, just get this one out of the way. Okay. I like this. Let's see, what else do I want done? Yeah, I always wonder why I left Catalyst, and now I know. You know, the laughter in this room is always a really, really fun thing for me. In fact, it's part of the impetus for what I want to talk to you about today and also the next two Sundays. We're gonna look at some passages from the letter to the Philippian church over the next few the next three Sundays, today included. And one of the things about that letter is that it is typically known as a letter of joy. Now, what's ironic about that fact is that Paul writes this letter from a Roman prison, and consistently talking about joy as he writes this letter. And almost amazing to hear him talk about joy in the midst of his circumstances. At one place he says that, I don't care if I'm in prison. I don't care if I'm in chains. I don't even care if there are people that are trying to take advantage of my imprisonment by usurping my role in the church by while I'm in jail, as long as the gospel's being preached. You know, he radiates this throughout the course of the letter. But one of the things that you pick up is that joy must then become, it must be a byproduct, it must be a fruit of, it must be essential to the whole idea of growing spiritually, of becoming mature. And so what we want to do is look at these three passages from those three chapters and see what it is that Paul says to us that helps us figure out how we can start from where we are to where we want to be spiritually. One of the things that we have to realize is that the spiritual journey has less of a destination than it does a journey impact. And so, wherever you are today, we're going to let that be point A, and maybe where you might head in your journey along the way in the next little bit might be point B, where you feel like you want to be, how you want to mature, what places you want God to address in your heart and in your life. Three chapters carry with it three words, each of which are a healthy habit. See, healthy organisms grow, and these healthy habits help us become healthier so that we might grow. And the healthy habits that we're going to look at, capacity to celebrate is an incredibly essential part of becoming more and more like Christ. But also, we're going to talk next week about imitation. And in that passage that we'll look at next week in Philippians 2, Paul talks about how he wants us to imitate Christ, to have the kind of attitude that pleases him and was in fact even modeled by him. And then the third chapter will give us some information about how the habit of declaration, of declaring who we are and where we want to go in our spiritual life will help us see those things come to pass. But to celebration. And if there's anything I want to push toward you in a way today, it's a really very simple sentence. And that simple sentence is this. The practice of celebration is a key habit When it comes to developing a healthy and a mature spiritual journey, I don't know, but we talk a lot about the weather. I mean, how many of you have said something already today to someone else about the weather? I have probably 87 times because I hate heat. This is why I'm not going to hell. Because I hate heat. But we talk about how hot it is. We talk about how cold it is. We talk about how much it's rained. We talk about how much it hasn't rained. We argue about which weather app on our phones is the best. You know, let's take a quick survey. Weatherbug? Weather Channel? Yeah, I don't think any. Wouldn't you like it where you get it right half the time and you're a star? Most of us, if we got it right at work half the time, we wouldn't have a job anymore. So, you know, but I thought with all the heat outside, in honor of thinking about some colder weather, just, you know, we could talk about New Year's Day for just a minute. The celebrations that kind of some of them have some kind of crazy traditions. And they open their window out every year. South Africa, they actually throw their houses out the window and some furniture out the window so that the old can come in. I mean, the old can go out and the new can come in. You know, even in the weird habits, beans, black-eyed beans for New Year's Day. You guys eat those? Yeah, I think that's a tradition that migrated. Sometimes, you know, so that, because pork, prosperity, because pigs, I mean, we celebrate weird things, right? The rooting of a pig generated the kind of celebration that we do on New Year's Day. I think it's kind of, but New Year's Day is one of those days where it's cold. So, you know, I think with the heat outside, maybe we just think about the fireworks that you start watching early in the morning from Sydney, Australia, and how we, hour after hour, time zone after time zone, city after city, the TV coverage has the fireworks celebrations. And yeah, I think the fact is that people love to celebrate. God, celebrate forever. You know, if you take a little journey, they celebrated everything they could find to celebrate. They danced, they celebrated what God was doing in their midst, and they had all these festivals. If you look at some of the significant moments in the life of Jesus in the New Testament, it's time there was something really, really significant, essential to his ministry. It was happening around one of the Jewish festivals because, you know, God's people have always been people. Not in that sense that you stayed out partying too late last night and you're having a hard time staying awake with me right now. But in the sense, there's something about celebrating that gets us to this place where we recognize the wonder of who God is, or bring to our forming that he does in us because he is so incredibly amazing. I'm going to look with you chapter 1 in Philippians, verses 3 to 11. We're going to kind of walk through this passage very, very, maybe casually in a sense, because we don't have time to get into everything, because this passage is rich. Paul's writing to the Philippian church, and he says, I thank my God every time for you. In all of my prayers for all of you, or as Pastor Roland would say, in all my prayers for y'all, which I also picked up from my West Virginia heritage, I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now. Being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Christ. It's right for me to feel this way about all of you, since I have you in my heart, or defending and confirming the gospel. All of you sharing God's grace with me, and God can testify how I long for all of you with the affection of Christ Jesus. And this is my prayer, that your love may abound more and more in knowledge and depth of insight, so that you may be able to discern what is best and may be pure and blameless for the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ. To God be glory. And I think I got that wrong. You can see it, right? Okay. So, but you see, with celebration. In fact, if you there's a celebratory tone to that whole passage all the way through. Paul's writing to these people. He loves these people. They're partners with him. They've given him a gift. And part of what this letter is doing, it's a thank you note to the Philippian church for the fact that they've been supporting him, even financially, poverty. They've been supporting him as he's imprisoned. Paul founded this church, and you can read about that. That church became partners with Paul in the book of Acts, and there's this relationship that exists, and he celebrates. When I pray for you, I think about you all the time, and I pray for you, and when I pray for you, I pray for joy. And what Paul is really grateful for, very simple fact, that they are partners together in the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so, that in chapter 1, verses 3 to 5, he talks about how one of the things he's really, really grateful for is how they're in the gospel. He says, I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now. Now, you see that on the screen in front of you, and thankful for them. But the word that he used, an interesting word, because we think of partnership in a way, you know, maybe business partners or their transactional arrangement. But what Paul is talking about here is a completely different thing. The word he uses is a word that we actually translate fellowship. Now, when we hear the word fellowship, back if you've been around the church a long time, what you'll think about is a potluck, right? Is way more than a part. This word actually means that we share life and we share mission. That we join our hands together, we live together, we walk together, we support one another, encourage one another, we come around each other from this body of believers. Paul is receiving from them and he's giving to them. And out of that, there's this incredible life and shared mission that they celebrate together, because everything that they know now is that the kingdom is part of something vast and large and huge and critically important. It's life-changing. It changes all of each. We get to have a... But he also is experiencing wonder through a very dark place. And the church walking through that dark place with him. Even though they're not doing that physically, he's in prison and they're not. They're in Rome. Nevertheless, there's this point in sharing, and Paul is great. And that is an incredibly important piece and something that we ought to celebrate. I have some friends, and their names are Ray and Tina Hauser. And Tina has an incredible ministry. She has written, I think, her 19th book is about to come off the presses, and it's It's really remarkable. She's been a children's pastor. She's an organization now where she does work with children's ministry leaders. And if you hear, it's all over the place. You would think, wow, this lady must be strong and she must be healthy and there must be all kinds of things about her, you know, her physical life even. But if you knew Tina, you would also know that she's had over 60 surgeries in her life. She's struggled with all of her adult life. And she's had this autoimmune disease and the rheumatoid arthritis and other autoimmune issues that have just kept her with physical problems and from that have required up to around 60 surgeries. Recently, because of her inability to overcome infection in her leg, Tina had her leg. When she was told that she was going to have her leg amputated, her husband, Ray, told me that the very first thing she said to him was, "Will the kids..." She had a few weeks ago, and just this past week, she made this Facebook post. I want to share it with you. She said, "Join..." She had me right there. This part of the amputation journey is about to end. I leave acute rehab and head home Thursday morning. She says, insert squeal of delight. "I know there's going to be much to figure out at home, but it feels tremendous to be at this point. I'm more convinced than ever that God uses his people in the healing process. Every note of encouragement and support, filled with prayer, gave me a little boost, like breathing in fresh air. I was amazed how some people saw that weren't so obvious, like giving Ray gas 50 trips he made into the city for this hospitalization alone. Or the guys who've been mowing our lawn for weeks, even though one neighbor got an unexpected blessing when their lawn was mowed instead of ours. Or the weekly videos I get from my kids at church. You know me, I love doing things differently. Ray's trying to figure out how I can get to a baseball on Sunday. That would be amazing." Okay, now, this is a lady, I'm pretty sure that this was where the picture was. She was standing with her leg missing in a picture. And the first words in her post were, join me in celebrating this week." What made her celebrate? The people of God wrapped their arms around her, loved her, nurtured her, cared about her. A little closer to home. Some of you will know Valerie and I's journey together. When we were serving as interim pastors here at Catalyst, we discovered that she had cancer. And, in the lives of pastors, most of the time, you are on the other end giving care, walking with other people. But this family... and became the church to us in ways that we had never experienced church. And it was really surprising to me how in the midst of a dark journey, we found reason to celebrate because God used people. See, here's the thing. God always shows up in our lives, whether we can feel it or not. And sometimes he shows up in the form of his people. So we celebrate this partnership that we share, this relationship that's far beyond having a potluck. I wonder if you would be able to either share your story, not in the moment, but I wonder if some of the stories about how God's people have come around you could give you a new perspective on some of the circumstances that you faced. Because then, maybe like Tina, I don't think Tina celebrated that her leg was amputated. And I can promise you that Valerie and I never celebrated the cancer. Tell you that Tina celebrated how God showed up in the midst of her struggle. And I can tell you that that's who we saw in you. It was him. Because we're partners in the gospel. And it might be that you celebrate it in a different way. You might celebrate the fact that it's you in somebody else's life. So don't be timid. Get out there and partner with people. Celebrate how wonderful it is to be a part of the family of God. So we celebrate. Another thing that we can celebrate is we celebrate good news. This partnership that we have isn't just a connection because we like each other. Because I don't even know if you like me. But that we share is because we're partners in gospel, great good news. What celebrating? Paul wanted them to celebrate in this context because they had plenty of bad news. The Philippian church, the culture that was hostile toward full of immorality, was full of poverty. It was full of sorcery, antithetical to what they were hearing in the gospel. The world was a dark place full of them. That in the midst of where they lived, there was this moment. He said, I pray with joy partnership in the gospel from the first day. That day was that day in Philippi when the gospel first and it was brought to Apostle Paul and his companions. And on that changed. It's a great story in Acts. There was this transformation. Philippi, the sorcerers were still there. There was another element to it. Philippian people who embraced the gospel of God. No longer were they faced with the reality that only provisions they could have in life themselves. Now they had a new provision. God had drawn them near. They were forgiven. They're many of them who were Gentiles, for the first time, it felt like they could go into the presence of God without having to become. It was new. I think yet the gospel is such great news. Isn't it easy to think that it's all about is going to church and being a good person? The reality of it is that you and I were in a dark place. We were separated from God by our sin. And the wages of that sin would have been death for us. But someone made sure we knew the gospel. Somewhere we experienced the grace of Christ. If we have a relationship with Him, we have it because the good news invaded. And in the midst of that, that gives us something to celebrate. You know, I think that there's a lot of, if you haven't seen it, come out of the cave. Apart from God, separated from God, He found us. By sin, by those back our own fears, when shame haunted us, when guilt, there and gave us new chances. He broke our delivered us, where there was no way, he made a way. Why? There is good news to celebrate you. Celebrate the wonder of the gospel. It is good news. You don't have to just we operate with the illusion in our culture that if we want to know Christ, if we really want to have a relationship, if we want to be a quote good Christian, then clean ourselves up. Fine. But that's backwards. When he made us fishers of men and women, I think his philosophy was, you catch them, I'll clean them. And so maybe we could celebrate the fact that when we were dirty, we're lonely, he became our companion. When we were isolated, he called us friends. When we couldn't see our way forward, he walked with us. When there wasn't a way, he made a way. Because that's who he is. He's the author. When you look at where you've been, surely you can celebrate darkness that you've lived through. It doesn't trivialize your pain. It doesn't ignore your circumstances. It just says in the something else to see. Far greater, far that surrounds us. Greater than your darkness. It's greater than your bondage. It's greater than your whatever need it is that you have. And so we celebrate. And when we celebrate, it helps us grow spiritually. When we celebrate good, it changes our focus from us and us to the one who, in the midst of our bad news, brings. And so we celebrate our partnership, we celebrate gospel, God's good work. Paul says in Philippians, I'm confident that he who began this good work in you he'll keep on doing it. He'll bring it to completion until the day of Christ. Now, what that does in that verse is it says to the Philippians, we're partners together. We have this mission, this life that we share. We're in it. We're in this thing. We're in this thing because the gospel's good news. And part of the good news is that when we came to know Christ, he did a good work in us, and he could do good work in us all the time. We didn't just become religious. We didn't sign a... We didn't get up a resolution, even though we celebrate funny. Instead, in 2 Thessalonians, that a new creation is gone. The new was come. He started a good work in us, and he never, ever stops. He continues to work in us, and we grow in him. Relationship with him becomes more fruitful. It becomes more and more meaningful, more and more powerful. He continues to do work in us. Would you let him? Wants to do. In Exodus, That whole book is a great story, right? Of how God saw his oppressed and sometimes incredibly sinful people and found a way to deliver them from the hands of Pharaoh, who had held them in bondage and slavery. Richard Foster writes about that experience for them. And he raises this question. He says, who fought for the slaves and set them free? Who stood by them at the Red Sea? Who made certain that they had food and water in the desert? Was it not God who gave them his name, his law, his word? Who guided them by day and night through the trackless wilderness? Was it not Yahweh who forgave their sins renewed his commitment and covenant, continued to lead them despite the creation of a grotesque golden calf? Was it not God himself who chose to live among them?